Come to the altar of Anubis, the guide of the dead.
Welcome back to another episode of the Chainsaw Enema Show. As always, I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
What are we watching tonight, Mike?
We are watching The Mummy.
From?
The Mummy.
That's usually reverse. The Mummy from 1932, and this is our third installment of our Universal Monsters episodes.
Yeah.
There it is.
Nah, this one I'm super, super excited about.
Yeah, you mentioned that on the previous episode. I watched it 1.5 because the first time I fell asleep. And last night I managed to get through the whole movie. Because on the last episode, like I said, this was not my favorite out of the Universal Monsters. It's last on my list. And I do believe that this is first on your list.
Yeah, by far.
Which is a tie with Dracula, I'm assuming, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, this movie is another one that's very special to me. The first time I watched it was with my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just been in love with it ever since. And this is kind of like in a lot of ways, the dawning of the new modern era of special effects.
Mm-hmm.
What Boris Karloff, I mean, what he went through in Frankenstein was bad enough. This was 10 times worse.
Oh, he had to sit through, they said 8 hours.
Yeah.
And Frankenstein was only about 4 hours. And the makeup process through Frankenstein, though it was something new that no one's ever seen before, it wasn't as excruciating as The Mummy was from what they mentioned on the special features.
Yeah, from what Tom Savini was talking about, they actually had to like wrinkle up smooth out his skin.
Mm-hmm.
And then put the spirit gum, and I think it's collodium is what it's called.
I think so.
And then the liquid plastic there.
And then funnily enough, they used Egyptian cotton.
Yeah.
Which is I'm blanking on his name, the makeup artist there.
Oh, God.
Gray hair. Yeah. He's a makeup effects artist, and he's very well known for American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
I am blanking on the name right now.
So am I.
But anyway, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he mentioned that they used Egyptian cotton, and I laughed at that.
Yeah, which is kind of like, you know, wiping your butt before you take a poop. You know, you have one of the most comfortable cottons in the world, and you're using it to torture this poor guy, you know?
That is a very interesting way of putting it. But yes, you are right. So for this, this movie was... like I said, I was not that excited about seeing this specific movie as I am. I'm more excited about all the other Universal Monsters. This one is last on my list. But,
yeah.
I mean, I'm always excited to do the podcast and watch movies and study up on them and look up, you know, lots of information. It's fun to me.
Yeah, but this is going to be completely reversed next week, by the way.
Yeah, because next week we're doing The Invisible Man, because that comes next, and you were not very fond of this, as to me, it's one of my favorite. It is my favorite out of the Universal Monsters, but we'll get into that later. Let's talk about our top cast for this movie. Of course, we have Imhotep, who's played by, of course, Karloff the Uncanny, or just Karloff, or Boris Karloff, whatever you want to call him.
Not question mark this time.
No, that was Frankenstein. Zita
Johann
as Helen, and David Manners, who plays Frank, who also starred as John Harker in Dracula, also known for other horror films such as The Black Cat and The Death Kiss. And I think it's the Black Cat where it features Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff.
It is.
They're the two main characters through the whole movie. And I have still not seen this movie, and I'm dying
Amazing
to see
movie.
It.
Amazing
dying.
Movie.
That's what I've heard.
Boris Karloff is fantastic in it.
As well as Bela Lugosi. I've seen clips of this and previews, and it looks like a very intriguing watch. This is a pretty great cast. Overall, it was an interesting watch for me, and I'm sure for you it was a pleasure as always, I'm guessing.
Oh, it was amazing.
And to watch this, too, in the restored version...
Yeah.
That's probably why it was an easier watch for me this time, too, because when I first watched this, it was USA up all night when I was a kid, though I don't remember it. And then years back, I think the last time I actually sat down to try to watch this was around 2015, somewhere around there, and I just could not do it. And that was on a DVD,
yeah,
and it was not a restored version, so it was still very difficult to watch.
Yeah, you probably watched it on one of the Legacy Collection DVDs.
Yep, that was it. Yeah, I miss those.
No, they were a really nice set. Not as nice as the Blu-ray set, but they were still pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely something cool to have in your collection. What I thought was interesting about this movie was when it started, and immediately when it started, I went to look this up because I knew it sounded familiar. The main theme music to the opening credits, it's the same from Swan Lake, like the same movie from Swan Lake used to open Dracula.
Yep.
I thought that, because I heard it and I'm like, wait a second. This sounds very familiar.
They used a lot of classical music in a lot of these different, you know, older movies and whatnot. I always find it kind of fun to watch them and see if I can remember which one it is, because I'm a huge fan of classical music.
You know, throughout the film's production of this movie, like I said, I wasn't thrilled to watch the movie, but my thoughts have changed, I will say. But yeah, I found some really interesting trivia. There was actually great tension between Zita Johann and the director of this movie, Karl Friend, who's Hungarian, I think, right?
Yes, I believe so.
He's definitely foreign. I'm pretty sure it was Hungarian. But they disliked each other immensely, like right from the start. According to Johann, the first day of filming, Carl attempted to portray her to the producers as a temperamental actress who's very hard to work with. I can just picture that.
Yeah, they'll start out on a bad foot.
Yeah, I mean, I can just picture how that went down. And there's no nice way of putting that. That's just a very, it's insulting.
Yeah.
And it's just rude, whether it's true or not. But I would immediately be pissed off about that too.
Oh yeah. Oddly enough, as much as I love this movie, it's probably one of the ones that I knew least about. But from what I understand, from, you know, what we were talking about earlier and from what I've heard in the past, she was a little on the nutty side to begin with.
Yeah, a little bit.
So coming in and having the director pretty much calling her a temperamental bitch probably didn't help matters any.
No, I mean, I think she was great for the role, especially because she's into, like, the occult and all of this stuff about Imhotep and the whole reincarnation of life, that whole story.
Oh, yeah.
She is a firm believer in that, or was. She passed away, I'm guessing, right? I mean, all these people have died. But yes, she was a very, very firm believer in this stuff. And I don't know if you remember from the special features, a couple of people on there actually interviewed her like years and years ago. I think they went to her actual house. And when she got interviewed, she got all dressed up, made up, kind of like in The Mummy, just to talk to an interviewer. And it wasn't being recorded, filmed, or nothing. They said that that was just the type of person that she was, which is very cool.
Yeah, I mean, she was very over-dramatic.
That's definitely the word.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I thought she was an absolute knockout. She actually, one of the reasons why I love this movie so much is I just thought she was absolutely beautiful. Yeah, I've heard from a lot of people that she was
a little out there. But what's cool is she knew a lot about this stuff, which was great to have her in this character, to play this character.
Oh yeah.
So it kind of fit perfectly.
And she played the part amazingly. I mean, I can't really think of anybody, especially around that time, who could have played the part better than she did.
No, neither can I. She was definitely perfect for the role, especially during that one scene where she meets Imhotep. What's his name in the movie? Van something?
Piero.
No. I forget his the name that he was going by. He wasn't going by Imhotep. They knew him as... I can't believe I don't have this in my notes.
I can't remember. It's been less than 24 hours since I watched the damn movie. I'm sticking with Vampiro.
Stick with Vampiro. I'm gonna... I hate you so much. But... But yeah, the part when she's first introduced to Imhotep, Boris Karloff's character, the way that they are looking at each other in that deep, like, stare, it went on forever, it seemed like. It was a good, like, 5 to 10 minute scene. There was just, you know, you see a close-up of Karloff, and then you see close-ups of Johann. It was just really intense and very dramatic and suspenseful, seeing that connection between those two. And she also had the nicest things to say about Boris Karloff as an actor, too. She said that, and it doesn't just come from her, everybody else said that Boris Karloff did not complain once about the makeup process.
Oh, no.
Which is a huge shock, and especially for 1932, because, I mean, that's a long time. I mean, 4 hours is one thing for Frankenstein, but holy shit, 8 hours of makeup and having it being tortured, basically, for 8 straight hours. But I'm sure it also helped that Jack Pierce and Boris Karloff were good friends at that time. And
I did hear, you know, hear a little bit about Jack Pierce. Just kind of made me laugh. Apparently, he relished in a great amount of joy at times for torturing these people he was doing the special the makeup on. But I also heard that there were times where Boris Karloff would actually sleep in his makeup, so he wouldn't have to get up and have it done again. Because apparently, as bad as it was to put it on, it was like 20 times worse taking it off.
Oh, yeah. Sarah Karloff said that it was excruciating getting it off, and it would take hours beyond hours, and they'd have to do it slowly, and it would tear and rip at his skin. And it was just, I mean, if anyone's familiar with just spirit gum, that can suck. But when you have all this other stuff and makeup on that Boris Karloff had added to that spirit gum, it doesn't just sweat off. I mean, if you do it just right, it won't sweat and peel off easily.
Right.
And when you're wearing it, you know, and you go through for 8 hours and you're wearing it through take after take. There were no 12-hour shifts back then for these actors.
No.
They would go further. There were no rules like that back then. They would just keep going. Zita Johann, they worked, well, the director was responsible for that, worked her to the bone, to the point of exhaustion, where she was like really genuine about most of the scenes in this movie because of how unbelievably exhausted she clearly really was.
Right.
It's amazing. One thing that's really cool, this really drew me to it, the discovery of the actual pharaoh, how do you say this? Tutankhamun's tomb. Yeah, the discovery of this and the alleged curse it contained actually inspired Universal to make this film, and the director too. He was very intrigued. Well, when Howard Carter opened the sarcophagus of King Tut in 1925, the screenwriter John Balderston was present as a reporter for the New York World, which is pretty awesome. So this is, by the way, the only film that's not as fictional as the other movies.
Right.
There's a lot of truth and history behind this movie. I mean, some people might believe in the curse and stuff like that, and that's, that's fine. I personally don't, but this is what definitely separates this movie from the other movies.
Right. This movie took inspiration from, I believe it was an Italian aristocrat, Consiglio, I believe his name was.
Sounds right.
Yeah. He actually, there was a rumor that he lived for like hundreds of years, and you know, the rumor kind of spread into this bigger thing, and eventually it made its way over to the States, and the people at Universal heard about it, and they were like,
yeah, you
know, that would be really cool to make a movie out of that. I did not realize the amount of freaking mummy movies there were. Good God.
There's definitely quite a few. And I mean, a lot of them are very different from original one that it first came out with. A lot of them have been redone. And then, of course, you got your Hammer horror movie, The Mummy,
which they did.
And it's interesting. There's a lot of trivia and information I did not know about this. And going back to the makeup, there were so many layers of cotton that were glued to Boris Karloff's face to create that wrinkled look of Imhotep as a mummy, that he was unable to move his facial muscles enough even to speak. And you can tell that when you first see him, as you know, after he's got all the bandages off, and years later he comes as this other guy and he talks. His face looks very stiff, but it works for the movie, too.
Yeah, when he had all the wraps on him and everything, they had him wheel him around the freaking set because he couldn't walk.
He submitted to such drastic bonding makeup. I mean, why he did this is incomprehensible, because there was actually a wooden dummy used in the close-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Karloff was used only in the take where he opens his eyes.
Yeah.
In that intro there. I mean, the film didn't require such drastic makeup, as Karloff, you know, he really wasn't shown walking either, or even standing in full mummy bandages. It was different later on, but in this movie, I was really shocked to see that him in full bandages was only a very short time. Yeah. That is the intro.
Well, back at that time, you know, that's what not only Boris Karloff wanted, but it also Jack Pierce. And after Jack Pierce was fired.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, the whole, he didn't sign a contract earlier on.
No.
And I guess, I mean, for that time, people didn't think like they do today, so. Right.
And the fact of the matter that, you know, a few years afterwards, they wanted to bring him back as an understudy was a real slap in the face.
Yeah.
But anyways, you know, all this makeup that Jack Pierce did was done by hand, meticulously, painstakingly done over hours. In the later films, after Jack Pierce left, mostly what they used were rubber masks, and you could really tell the difference.
Yeah, kind of like in the later Frankenstein movies, yeah. They would use that rubber flathead, and you definitely could tell. I mean, it worked for the movie, it was pretty good, but it was nowhere near as amazing as Jack Pierce's work. And Jack Pierce's makeup was considered so outstanding that Hollywood Filmograph Journal honored him with a special award that was presented to him at a ceremony by Boris Karloff himself. Yeah. I wish they had that filmed, because I would have loved to have seen that. But after Pierce's death in 68, the trophy was believed lost. And many years later, when a sink was removed from an old makeup studio at Universal, apparently it was rediscovered. So that award is out there somewhere. I'm guessing it would be at the Universal, you know, where they got all the collectibles and stuff that they keep.
I did find it funny on the special feature that there was a small clip of the old show, This Is Your Life, and Boris was on there, and
Jack Pierce comes out.
Yeah, Jack Pierce, he says, you know, you used to come in at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I used to torture you for 8 hours. And Boris was like, I know who that is.
I loved watching that, and then they freeze framed on them, like shaking hands and smiling at each other.
Yeah.
And then it got amazingly sad. I really was about to cry after seeing this, because it was a moment.
Yeah, I mean, they basically say that he died penniless and forgotten, and it's a damn tragedy. Again, and I know I say this a lot, you know, I just have to emphasize, he was a pioneer for so many different things. Not just for horror, but for our special effects throughout all different genres of movies. He laid the foundation for modern cinema practical effects.
Oh, he's definitely a big deal.
Before Jack Pierce, there was pretty much Lon Chaney and
anybody else would do that their own makeup. You know, a lot of theater actors and stuff like that they were used to doing their own makeup. In fact, Bela Lugosi insisted on doing some of his own makeup for Dracula. And that was on the special features of the Mummy movie that we saw. They mentioned that about Bela Lugosi, which I thought was pretty interesting, because I thought it was all Jack Pierce.
But no, I mean, like, basically here's how it went. You had, you know, Lon Chaney, who was the first one to use stuff like, you know, spirit gum and whatnot to make the way he looked in Phantom of the Opera. But then after Lon Chaney, there's Jack Pierce. And Jack Pierce
he was inspired by
Lon Chaney. Yeah, and then everybody else that you could think of in special effects was inspired by Jack Pierce.
Especially Tom Savini. He mentioned on here the reason why he does what he does today. He was very much inspired by Jack Pierce.
Oh, yeah. Tom Savini, Joe Dante. I mean, you name it.
Joe Dante.
Or not Joe Dante.
Never. That one dude there that we can't think of the name.
Yeah, the one with the face and the shirt.
I'll write a note of it, and we'll mention it in the next episode we do.
But yeah, I mean, so many different special effects artists took their inspiration from Jack Pierce. And the fact of the matter that he is not a household name is a travesty.
It's a shame that he was pretty much forgotten about all these years. And I mean, at least they're mentioning it on these Universal Monsters films today, at least.
Yeah.
And he's being recognized because he was extremely important. And just because there was no contract doesn't mean that he shouldn't get credit.
Right.
It really is a damn shame.
It really is. Because, again, there wouldn't be anything like what we have today in special effects if it wasn't for him.
I wanted to mention, unlike Frankenstein and Dracula, and those are the previous movies that we just did on our last episodes, if you have not heard them yet, you have to.
Go listen to them now.
They're fun listens. While other Universal films This film had no official sequels, but rather was semi-remade in The Mummy's Hand, and that was 1940, and then its sequels, The Mummy's Tomb from 1942, and then, of course, The Mummy's Ghost, 1944, The Mummy's Curse, 1944. These were later followed up with spoof, one of my favorite movies, Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy. That was in 55. I love Abbott and Costello with the monsters. Meet Frankenstein, Jekyll and Hyde, The Mummy. I love these films, and they focus on the mummy named, is it Karis or
Karis? Karis.
The Mummy's Hand recycled footage from the original film used in the telling of Karis' origins. And Karloff is clearly visible in several of these recycled scenes, but he's not credited. But you can see him there, though.
You know, all the way up into 1999 when the Brendan Fraser Mummy came out.
Mm-hmm. I love that movie.
Oh, I do too.
The first one is by far the best one.
The ones afterwards I liked, but the first one is by far the best.
I am sorry. I have to say that the Scorpion King was just, the CGI was unbelievably god-awful. It was, and that was played by The Rock too, and that was exciting to see him because he's a fantastic actor. I love
like
The Rock, fantastic
bad claymation, like really yeah, bad claymation.
It was terrible CGI, and The Rock. I felt so bad, you know, because he's such a great guy, great wrestler, and a phenomenal actor. I really like his
and
acting.
And he did do the Scorpion King movies, which
right,
were actually
those were pretty decent,
not bad. Mm-hmm. But that CGI,
this is once again.
Practical effects.
There we go. We love practical effects. And this. And if you watch this, this is the reason why we prefer practical effects. Because if you're going to do CGI and you do it this way, and for the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say, oh, well, for the time, the CGI. No. For that time, there was so much CGI out there that was done so much better than this.
Yeah.
And they really botched this movie with the Scorpion King. And it sucks because the scene when you first see him come in is an exciting scene.
Yeah, and then the freaking, you know, stone door opens and he walks out.
Yeah.
I laughed my ass off. I thought he looked like a freaking live-action Happy Meal toy.
I thought it turned into a cartoon. It was so bad.
Yeah.
Happy Meal toy.
Yeah, he looked like a live-action Happy Meal toy. I mean, the story for the movie was great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the story. And the same thing with the third one and the fourth one. I really enjoyed the stories.
Mm-hmm.
The CGI in the third one and the fourth one were somewhat better. But that second one, oh, wow.
But there were some great mummy movies that came out after this. And also, let's not forget the Hammer Film production series. In the late 1950s, British Hammer Film Productions took up the mummy theme.
Which we will do eventually.
Beginning with The Mummy 1959, which rather than being a remake of the 32 Karloff film, it's based on Universal's The Mummy's Hand from 1940, which is a fantastic movie.
Amazing.
And a fantastic Misfits song. I have to throw that out there. And The Mummy's Tomb 1942. Hammer's follow-ups, you have The Curse of the Mummy's Tomb, The Mummy's Shroud, and Blood from the Mummy's Tomb. But they're unrelated to the first film or even to each other. But there are a lot of them. There's been a ton of mummy movies. I didn't realize this either.
And the cartoons that they had that came out based on the mummy. I remember the one I remember the most because it was in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
Was they did a show called Mummies Alive.
I love that.
It was such a cool show.
I grew up watching that. I used to watch it before I'd go to school.
Yeah, that and Skeleton Warriors was another one I used to watch.
Oh, such great.
But yeah,
movies,
I mean, the mummy it's just like Dracula and Frankenstein. I mean, you know, mummies and movies and cartoons and comic books and toys and video games and...
The mummy, this first movie is what spawned all of it.
Oh, yeah. I guarantee you, anytime you go out on Halloween, you'll see at least one person dressed up like the mummy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same thing as Dracula, Frankenstein.
And as much as I love different mummies that I've seen throughout the years, especially the Monster Squad mummy, I loved the makeup job that they did for him.
Good.
It was a little hokey in parts, especially when the mummy's holding onto the vehicle as they're driving away and he unravels. I love that scene. It's hokey.
It was so perfect,
but,
though, because that whole movie was hokey.
Yeah,
it
was. It was supposed to be that way, but I love that makeup job. But with that being said, I have to say that nothing will ever top Boris Karloff as the mummy.
No.
It is, and it sucks that he only had a little bit of time with all of that makeup that he and all the pain that he endured with this.
But he insisted on it.
He did. He was a good sport about it, I'll tell you that. And yeah. I mean, Jack Pierce really, really wanted to do it too. Yeah. As you said earlier, Mike, he loved to torture people with the makeup. And
yes, he did.
I mean, he had the whole getup too. He had like that classic
button-up surgeon jacket.
It was like a surgeon, a barbershop surgeon, like yeah. white button-up coat. Yeah, it was
with the
just,
slick back hair.
Yeah, it worked for him, man.
Yeah, it was awesome. Seeing pictures of him when he was a young man and just the glee in his eyes when he was doing the makeup.
Oh, you know he loved it. I've been posting pictures up on, my Facebook page, and I'll post some more on the show's Facebook page.
Yeah, there you go.
But we're gonna get into the a brief movie plot of this, because there's not a whole lot to talk about, and that's usually what we do on the show. We go through the whole plot and pick out things here and there, but I don't think we're gonna do it with this because there's not too much to pick out.
This
really, lots of trivia we'll have yeah. though.
If you've ever seen a mummy movie, pretty much you know the plot.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing as the Brendan Fraser one, only it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
And, I mean, of course, there's more action. There's different elements other than just horror. I mean, there's a lot of good comedy in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
I love that about
when he screams at the mummy.
Yeah, it was a little hokey, but it worked. I liked it. It was fun.
But again,
it's a fun watch.
This movie is more like Dracula. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's compared to it being like the same exact thing.
Yeah, because it's a horror romance.
Yeah.
You know, there's the romance between, you know, the mummy and the character Zita mm-hmm. Johann plays. You know, they back in the day, 3,000 years ago, mm-hmm. they were lovers.
And in this one, what they're doing is he wants to sacrifice Johann's character.
Yeah.
What's her name? Helen?
Yes, Helen.
And I don't think
she
doesn't really
that.
Seem to know that. And then when she finds out,
yeah.
she's...
After seeing the sarcophagus that her former body was in,
yeah,
it comes to her and
tweaks
she realizes... Yeah, she kind of goes a little batshit, which yeah. I would too.
Yeah, and doesn't want to die and doesn't want to go through with it and...
Let me go! Let me go! Don't kill me! I'm a princess of Isis!
Once again, I have to say, just like Dracula, just like Frankenstein, another very quick ending. Ended very abruptly. And,
but
I mean, it was fine.
Ending.
It was fine. Yeah, it was a great ending. I wish it was a little drawn out, a little bit more. This one scene in the beginning where the mummy's got when he finally comes alive after this dude is reading the scroll. I love that scene because he's just laughing.
He went freaking nutso.
Well, yeah, he's so like terrified that he's just laughing. You know, you get so terrified, you just, that old school type of, like, laughter. And Mummy walks away. You don't see him walk, because, you know, like
obviously.
I said earlier, but you do see the bandages, and you did see his hand grab the scroll and take
yeah.
it and walk away. And meanwhile, this guy's just laughing his ass off. And then when the other guy comes in to tell him to get a hold of himself, basically, he's
yeah.
like, he's laughing, and he's like, he went for a little walk.
You know what? Something just occurred to me, because we have this playing in the background. The guy there who's laughing, he looks like Sean Penn.
Yeah, he does a little bit. I think it's the hair. Almost like an earlier Sean Penn type of look. Yeah, a little
yeah.
bit.
Oh, that's weird.
If you hear a dog in the background, I do apologize. Dog upstairs is, he won't shut the fuck up. So... He's a good boy, but there's nothing we can do about him. So let's just get into this brief movie plot. It starts out, an ancient Egyptian priest called Imhotep, who's played by Karloff, is revived when an archaeological expedition in 1921, who was led by Sir Joseph Wemple, and he is played by the actor Arthur Byron. So he finds Imhotep's mummy. Pretty cool scene in the beginning. It's very cool. This was all filmed in California too, by the way. It was a lot of it was in the Mojave Desert. And
yeah.
I do believe that when they find the mummy, that's in the Mojave Desert.
Yeah, all those mummies out there.
Yeah, there's you'll find them. Imhotep had been mummified alive for attempting to resurrect his forbidden lover. The princess, I cannot say this name. This is going to be, I knew this was going to be an episode like this. All these names I cannot pronounce. Ankh Esenamon. Wemple's friend, Dr. Muller, who's played by Edward Van Sloan, he inspects the mummy and he exclaims the viscera were not removed. The usual scar made by the embalmer's knife is not there. You see where that's going.
Because he was buried alive.
That's right. Sir Joseph Wemple responds, "I guessed as much." And Muller then deduces that Imhotep was buried alive for sacrilege.
"I murmured the spell that raises the dead. They broke in upon me and found me doing an unholy thing."
Despite Muller's warning, Sir Joseph's assistant, Ralph Norton, who's played by Bramwell Fletcher, he reads aloud an ancient life-given scroll, and this is a scroll of Thoth. Did I say that right? Thoth?
Yes.
Imhotep escapes from the archaeologists, taking the scroll of Thoth. And prowls Cairo. So he prowls Cairo seeking the modern reincarnation of his former lover.
Cairo's a sir.
I'm sorry, for his forbidden lover. I'm just going to say that. I'm not going to say her name because I'm going to get it wrong every time.
Just say old Helen.
But yeah, I mean, this part, the makeup application process may have been grueling, but the end result is seriously incredible to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And Imhotep's jerky, limited movements make the resurrection scene look a lot creepier. Yeah. Especially when you see him open his eyes. It looks, and they said it on special features, it looks like life is going right back into him. And I think that's what it would actually look like if someone was to be resurrected.
Yeah.
Very slow coming back to life.
The camera, the usage of the camera, I should say, mm-hmm. in this movie is just absolutely amazing. The time lapses that they do,
mm-hmm.
The part where, you know, they have the camera fixed on him and the way he opens his eyes and whatever.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It's just so amazing.
So jump to 10 years later, Imhotep is masquerading as a modern Egyptian named Ardeth Bey. That's his name. God damn it. It was here all along. Ardeth Bey. Okay, so that's the name he goes by. We apologize. So he calls upon Sir Joseph's son, Frank, who's played by David Manners, and Professor Pearson, played by Leonard Muddy. He shows them where to dig to find the chick's tomb. His...
Old Helen.
Old Helen's tomb. The archaeologists, they find the tomb, give the mummy and the treasure to Cairo Museum, and thank Ardeth Bey for the information. Of course, Ardeth Bey probably doesn't want... He wanted to find it for himself,
right.
Clearly. But it was given to the museum. So Imhotep encounters Helen here, who's played by Zita Johann, a woman bearing a striking resemblance to the princess. Believing her to be Ankh Esenamon's reincarnation, he attempts to kill her with the intention of mummifying her, resurrecting her, and making her his bride. And she's saved when she remembers her past life and prays to the goddess Isis to save her, which is that big cat, right?
Yeah.
It's that big black cat. And the statue of the big black cat raises its arms and emits a beam of light that sets the scroll of Thoth on fire, which is a very cool scene. That's one of the coolest scenes of this whole movie,
The time lapse goes from the way it looks to the skeletal remains,
and then he breaks down into dust. I'm guessing it didn't show that part, but
it shows him. It shows at the very end him laying in a crumbled skeleton right. at the end. I love that part, and they did something similar in The Wolfman.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that was such an amazing usage of, you know, the camera, that time lapse, and that's something that's still used a lot in today.
It's great cinematography.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Cinematography, that's the word I was looking for. Thank you.
There you go. And that's pretty much the movie. That the Scroll of Thoth is on fire, and it breaks the spell that had given Imhotep his immortality.
Yeah.
So it caused him to age rapidly and crumble to dust, like we just said. And at the urging of Dr. Muller, Frank calls Helen back to the world of the living while the Scroll of Thoth continues to burn. End of curse. End of the movie. It ends very abruptly there. I gotta tell you, I did like the movie a lot more this time. I did not think I was going to, and I've never really been intrigued much to to watch it again after I've tried. But for our show, I had to give it a go, and I figured to our, you know, we owe it to the listeners to do this stuff. You know,
absolutely.
We want to try to make this interesting, and we want people to listen and maybe give good recommendations. And,
right.
you know, maybe someone out there is listening and might be thinking the same thing. Oh, I was never that intrigued by it because of this and that. Well, I wasn't really intrigued by it either. And I forced myself to sit down and watch this because I had to, because we had the show to do. And I was really impressed. All the stuff that I learned about it, too, that I never knew, like all the trivia and history behind it, and especially the pain and torture that Boris Karloff had to endure. Oh, my God. It was great to learn about all this stuff. All the special features on there, too, were a treat.
Oh, yeah. And see, this is why I'm kind of, you know, in a sense, I'm looking forward to watching The Invisible Man, because it's been a long time since I've seen it.
And it's played by the great Claude Rains, too.
And I love Claude Rains and Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, man, I can talk about The Invisible Man all day. I could say something now, but I won't, because I will go off topic. And we're not going to do that here. That's for the next episode.
Yeah, we're the next episode is going to be a really interesting one, just because I'm very excited to revisit all these movies.
Yeah,
not
same
just
here,
you know, the ones that I enjoy, because there were some of the Universal movie monsters I didn't particularly care for, but it also it's been almost 20 years since I've seen the majority of them.
It's time to watch them. What better than this time?
To be perfectly honest, the first time I saw Creature from the Black Lagoon, I was not a fan of it. I thought it was all right.
That's a very suspenseful, I mean, big time. That's like one of the most suspenseful Universal monster movies there is, because most of the time it's just watching Gilman swim around the boat.
Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of it the first time I saw it, but I'm still looking forward to watching it because, again, it's been a very long time. It's going to be very cool to revisit that.
And what's cool about this, like I said, a lot of the trivia from The Mummy that I learned, the character name Imhotep was taken from an actual ancient Egyptian. But the real Imhotep was the architect who designed the pyramids, and far from being executed in disgrace, was the only Egyptian other than the pharaohs who was made a god after his death. I thought that was really interesting. Like I said, this movie is very set apart from the other ones, because there's a lot of history behind this one, and truth and real stuff that's put into this movie.
Yeah, the lore behind this movie is almost as captivating as the movie itself.
Imhotep translates to "I come in peace." I never knew that. I never actually looked it up. It's an ancient Egyptian name for it.
This one and Dracula, and again, the Dracula movie and The Mummy are kind of tied for me as far as my favorites. But I did do a lot of research as far as the history of mummies and ancient Egyptian burials and stuff like that. It's always, you know, just intrigued me so much. Pretty much, I mean, Egypt is considered to be the earliest advanced civilization in known history. I mean, they were the first people that ever performed successful brain surgery, for crying out loud. And that was in, like, you know, 1800 BC or something like that.
Something like that.
So, I mean, they were the first people to actually use coca beans and like, foods and dishes and stuff like that. They're the first person to grow and cultivate and smoke tobacco.
I was always a little intrigued by Egyptian history and stuff like that, and mummies. Always thought it was cool, but when it came time to watch a movie or to actually read up on some of the history, some of it kind of bored the hell out of me, and watching it and documentaries and stuff bored the hell out of me too. I was really fascinated with the death metal band Nile,
because
all of their lyrics is all about Egyptian history and mummies and stuff like that, which is very cool. There's a lot of truth to their lyrics, as well as a lot of fictional stuff too.
Yeah.
But it's just been iffy for me. Like, it sounds cool, but then when I see it, it's like I'm not that impressed with it. You know, that's why I didn't care for this movie when I first saw it.
Right.
But after watching it and giving it some time now, I'm very, very glad I did. And like I said, a lot of the trivia and stuff, too, that I learned is great.
Yeah.
Like, there's this one part, the words that Boris Karloff mutters to threaten the rescuers, I think it's toward the end, and he has some sort of spell. Or no, I think when he's in one of the parts, he mutters these words and he begins saying Quebec, blah, 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 blah. I can't say these words, but it's loosely translated and they actually mean destruction. The full passage, they're most likely taken from the actual Book of the Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And it reads, and I'm going to try this. Nept Setu Nept Keb Kebet Kesef Nesini Neham.
I have no idea what you just said, but very good.
Well, apparently this is translated to Lady of Terrors, Mistress of Destruction, which repulses destroyers, delivering from destruction.
Nebet Etophanes.
Okay, then.
Exactly, yeah. I don't... I mean, I just think it's cool that they that actually translates to something, and they used that in the movie, and Boris Karloff learned that language for his role.
Yeah.
That's just one really cool thing about this movie, and that's just the kind of guy that Boris Karloff is, too. This was a year after he did Frankenstein.
Yeah, he definitely over-delivered on this one with the...
Oh, he definitely did. I mean, you watch him in this, I mean...
With learning his lines, because he didn't have any in Frankenstein.
No, he had quite a few in this one, and you could... It really, this movie really shows how fantastic of an actor Boris Karloff really is.
Oh, yeah.
His movements, him playing the mummy, and the dialogue that he delivers, and the way that he delivers it, too, and...
Well, it's kind of... Like the one scene there where he's getting invited to the party at the museum. Again, blanking on the name, but they reach to grab him, and he says, I apologize, but I'm repulsed by being touched.
Yeah, one of the doctors, I think, yeah, who owns or works in the museum or something, brings him to the office, and as he tries to lead him there, that's when he goes to grab his arm,
mm-hmm,
and he says, like, yeah, he doesn't want to be touched.
Your pardon, I dislike to be touched. At Eastern Prejudice.
And I thought that was, yeah, I thought that was perfect because he was a mummy and he's, yeah, still frail, I think. And
I wouldn't want to touch him.
No, you might get cursed.
He looks like a freaking leather handbag.
Yeah, and he's got tons of makeup on during, not when he's full mummy getup, yeah, but the 10 years later, and then you see him in that makeup with the wrinkles and stuff, he's, yeah, still got layers beyond layers of makeup on his face, which is kind of like surprising because... Looking at him, I mean, he had a great bone structure, Boris Karloff. Really. For this time, he did. Years later, he filled out a little bit. It was a little bit difficult to work with makeup, and that's when they started using the, you know, the different...
Rubber stuff.
The rubber stuff. We can't say this enough. He just endured so much pain through this.
Yep.
And, I mean, he even quoted years later that the makeup he wore for this film was way more uncomfortable than Frankenstein. Way more uncomfortable. But sure, he went through it and he did it.
Again, he never really complained about it. You know, it was just a part of the process.
Yeah. So that's really it for the plot. All the trivia that I've looked up. And
yeah,
I think we should get into our ratings. And I know that we said on Dracula that we weren't going to have a gorometer. But according to Mike before we started this show, he, yep, wants to throw in something because there's a scene in here that has just a tad bit of gore.
Yep.
I totally missed it when I was watching this movie. Well, why don't we do our final ratings first? Mike, you want to go first?
Oh, it's a 10. Yeah, there's no...
I thought it was going to be an 11 or 11 12.
11 and a half. No, it's a 10. It's and I know I really look at this movie through rose-tinted glasses in a lot of ways. And it's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I'm concerned, it's a 10.
Believe it or not, before watching this movie, I was not planning on rating this a 10. But I did rate it a 10. I mean, while this movie is definitely my least favorite of the Universal Monster movies I've seen, The Mummy's still an enjoyable watch. It has a decent plot. There's great actors that play decent characters, I thought. Great performances. And really well-done cinematography for its time. Beyond the standout performance of Karloff is the incredible cinematography throughout the film with, I believe the guy's name is Charles Stumar, along with the combination of brilliant makeup from Jack Pierce. And, I mean, of course, Jack Pierce is most well-known for his work on Frankenstein, but truly making The Mummy as terrifying as possible. It was all Jack Pierce. I mean, he did a fantastic job. So with that being said, this is a 10. And this is our third Universal Monster movie we have rated a 10.
Yep. And
so let's
truth
get in...
be told, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the majority of them are going to be 10s.
It's hard to rate them anything less because we're looking at all of the special features. We're looking at all the background stuff, the people that worked on the film, what they had to go through, the time that this was done, the cinematography, the score, you
the
name it. I mean,
of this we're
looking,
movies.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking at all of this stuff yeah. and to give it anything less would just be, I mean, to me, it would be disrespectful in a way.
Same here. And again, as I said, this is also factoring in the importance of these movies. These aren't some throwaway B-rate movies that were forgotten by time. These are movies that are so iconic that almost 100 years later, they're still relevant.
And they're going to continue to still be shown. I mean, with these restored versions, oh God, yeah. years and years down the road, our kids' kids are going to be watching these, hopefully.
My God, in movie classes and cinematography classes and whatnot in college, they still right. show these movies as examples of, you know, cinematography, special effects, scores, mm-hmm. things like that. And again, that's almost 100 years since these movies came out.
Exactly.
So, again, you know, I've said it every episode, and I'll probably say it in all the episodes.
Yeah, we repeat ourselves a lot, especially with the Universal Monsters, just because yeah. I feel like we have to make sure that these things are said. And even yeah. though I go through and edit this stuff, I don't feel like picking out what we said and what we didn't said. I go right through and correct some stuff and then release it.
When it comes to these movies, want to do them justice. Because they deserve that.
Yeah, to the best of our ability, we're doing these movies. So with that being said, let's hit the goreometer. For me, I'm not giving it anything. So
I'm gonna
this
give
is all
it,
you.
I'm going to give it a one. There is a scene where it's showing back 3,000 years from the present. These warriors have gotten spears thrown through them.
Spears, yeah.
And between the spear, them getting impaled on the spears and there's some blood, I'll give it a one. You know, it's not like a chainsaw to the face, but especially for the time when it was done, I thought it was, you know, really one, really interesting, and two, for that time, that was gore, man. I mean, that was hardcore stuff.
Yeah, that was definitely something different to show the audience, something they've never really seen before on screen.
Right.
So that's understandable.
Yeah, so I'll give it a one.
Well, I think we did this movie justice. I mean,
I hope so.
You got any final thoughts?
The one thing I do want to say as far as not about the movie, I do have an email address now for the podcast.
Oh, right. Yeah, we'll be putting that up on our Facebook page. So if you want to write to us or comment anything, send it to the email, however you want to get in contact with us, really. I mean, if you got any questions, if there's anything we missed about this and you want to just add your 2 cents in there, please feel free. I mean, we consider ourselves to be pretty down-to-earth guys, friendly. We love doing this. We love talking to people. So if you just want to send a shout-out and just say hi, or if you have any recommendations, we will be taking requests after we're done with our Universal Monsters installments.
And if you send anything to my email, I will check it on a daily basis, and I will get back to as many people as I can.
There you have it. I have some final thoughts. Like I said earlier, once these bandages come off, you see... Once the bandages come off, you see more of Karloff's capabilities acting-wise. Imhotep / Ardeth Bey, like you said earlier, Mike, is written as a Dracula stand-in, but Karloff plays him with a different energy than what Bela Lugosi was doing. The stiff physicality and moments of inhuman behavior, they're still there. I mean, we're dealing with another walking corpse, after all, plus Karloff has that creepy death stare down, which you do see in this, and it's fantastic. But Imhotep doesn't possess the same ruthlessness and arrogance that Dracula does. He's more calculating, he's more secretive and more subdued. He's a guy with a plan, not an apex predator looking for a meal like Dracula. But his mask of normality is fixed on more firmly, and he really does his best not to take it off. There's an element of distaste with his current state of existence and with the original transgression that condemned him to that said state. I had to write these notes down because I wouldn't have been able to think of these myself on the spot. With that being said, I would recommend this movie to any horror fan out there. At least watch it once, because I do believe that this is a very important movie to watch. I mean, this is history right here. And even if you're not a fan of that, I'm not a huge fan of this movie. It's my least favorite out of all the Universal Monsters, but I definitely watched it, paid attention to it. I enjoyed watching it. I especially enjoyed watching it to see Jack Pierce's makeup on Boris Karloff, and just for the fact that he endured all this pain and stuff. It's worth a watch. Give him that much, you know? And what the fuck were you laughing at?
When you were trying to say ruthlessness, the only thing I could think was Ruth! Ruth! Baby!
Baby!
Ruth!
Baby!
Ruth! Oh my God.
You see, folks, we're big dumb idiots that just like to have fun.
Oh.
I think on that note, this is going to complete our 19th episode.
Oh, good Lord.
Of the Chainsaw Enema Show. Once again, if you want to reach out to us, please feel free. And
yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
And if you're a new listener, welcome. Be prepared for one hell of a ride with us.
Yeah, there's definitely something wrong with both of us.
Oh, boy. Yes, there is. With that being said, thank you all for listening, those of you who did listen. And don't forget to listen to our previous episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, iHeart, and more. If you have any suggestions or requests, just go to the Facebook page, send us a message, email, whatever. And remember to rate and review us, at least on Apple Podcasts. That really does help us know that there are listeners out there, even if it's just a quick good show, or even if you hate the show, go ahead and comment. We don't care. Don't forget to lock your doors and windows. Check the closet and look under the bed. Until the next time, I'm Johnny B. Ghoul.
And I'm Misfit Mike.
Always remember, keep the horror alive.